We're going to start the State Government Finance Committee for Wednesday, January 11th. Members, we will do approval of the minutes tomorrow. We've run into some glitches here with our computer system, so we'll do that tomorrow. Careful when you say glitch, right? See, nobody else is on commerce. They don't understand that reference. So what we're going to do here today is I've got Commissioner Mossman is here today. There he was. Oh, there you are. Okay. If you want to come to the table here. Back in December, Senator Kiffmeyer, who is the counterpart for State Gov Finance in the Senate, and I asked the agencies for a list of details on the budget, and we know that you guys have been busy in putting together the governor's budget, and so that's put a little bit of a damper on the ability to get all the data. We do have access to some of this data through the budget system, but we were looking to try and have a package of data that is the same across the board for every single agency, and so we asked them to put it in a template that will be easier for you legislators to review and compare from agency to agency. So I just want to make it as usable as possible for us, but we just need to give them a little bit more time to kind of put the details down. They were able to provide some information to us, and Helen's trying to, Ms. Roberts is working on trying to fill in the blanks as much as possible. So this will most likely not be our first time reviewing things with Commissioner Mossman for the Department of Administration, but at least gives us a start. And so with that, I'm going to direct members to their folders. And I think, Commissioner Mossman, I think we'll start with you. You can do the general overview, and then I'm going to ask Ms. Roberts to kind of walk through some things, too, if she would. So, Commissioner Mossman, if you want to start, please.
Madam Chair and members, Commissioner Mossman with the Minnesota Department of Administration, thank you. I look around the room, and I'm going to try not to take offense at the limited audience that I'm drawing this afternoon. I don't think it's because of you or I.
Geeks unite right here. And I don't know if it would be helpful for you, Commissioner. We do have quite a few new members. We could go around the horn once if that's helpful.
That would be helpful. I appreciate that.
Okay. Jim, you want to start us off?
Jim Geldman, DFL Caucus Research.
Ohana Omar.
Mary Klinish-Puddy.
Mark Uglum.
Bob Vogel.
Jim Nash.
John Holquist, Committee Administrator.
Sam Moyer.
Brian Cook, Republican Caucus Research.
Ellen Roberts, House Fiscal Analysis.
Matt Gehring from House Research.
Liz Olson.
Duane Plum.
Steve Green.
Bob Detmer.
Joanne Ward.
Peggy Flanagan.
Kelly Fenton.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. So good afternoon again, and I appreciate the opportunity to provide an overview of the Department of Administration. In addition, Madam Chair, to the handouts you mentioned, we have put together a one-pager also, which I think was in your packet, that we make available just to kind of have as a takeaway, a high-level summary of the Department of Administration, our budget, and our major functions as well. And I appreciate that, I'm sure you'll have some questions for the information that we were able to pull together at this time, and as you indicated, we'll keep working on that. But I also think that as we go through the overview, my hope is that many of your questions and some of that background information or context will be provided. I would just start, Madam Chair and members, with that upper left-hand corner. I like to start here because my team and I invested a fair amount of time this past calendar year and rolled out in summer a new set of mission, vision, values, and goals, which was very important to me because I think it really helps connect the work that we do at the Department of Administration to the expectation that we are trying, even though most of our customers are state agencies in many cases, our responsibility is to be helping make this a better place for Minnesotans, and our ultimate customers is Minnesotans. And so I think this set of mission, vision, and goals that we have rolled out really helps connect the work that we do to help make things in state government as a whole across the enterprise operate more effectively so that programs can be delivered in the best possible manner across state agencies. I would like to drop down also as we get started into the lower left-hand corner. I think that along with the input that we got from employees across the department and the work that went into that mission vision statement, that spirit of open innovation and openness and cooperation, continuous improvement, has really, I think, also been reflected in a number of changes that we have been able to sustain and implement in the last few years. Our contracts team at the Department of Administration, I actually didn't until I became commissioner know that the department was as effective as we are and continue to be, I think, increasingly effective at when we get responses to bids, RFPs for contracts. If the market, we believe, can still bear a better price for the state of Minnesota, we negotiate lower prices even than what may have been submitted in a bid. And so our we've been able to avoid avoid about $32 million in state contract savings through that effort with our negotiation teams. We also have a 25% reduction in the consumption of electricity across the state capital complex, which we estimate is about $2 million in avoided costs each year. We have about $14 million, a little north of that, that we return to state agencies because we make sure that we, through the surplus operations of the state, find a market for products or equipment and furniture that is no longer needed by the state, including snow plows and dump trucks and things like that, maximizing the value and the resale of them. We also have a little north of 15% reduction in gasoline usage in the state fleet as a result of efficiency measures that we have been implementing. Those are some of the enterprise-wide functions. We have also internally implemented consolidation of our financial staff. That is just a better way for us to serve the various businesses that we operate at the department, and to do that in a more, I think, effective and efficient way. And I think as a result of just better utilizing our space, frankly, moving some, we had some staff spacing needs that we moved to smaller cubicles instead of moving to more space and things like that. So frankly, we're always keeping an eye on how we can maximize the resources we have. And then one final example of that is when I arrived a couple years ago, even though we're one of the key agencies responsible for state government COOP and COG planning, continuity of government planning, we actually did not have a staff person to do that, and so we found some ways to find some resources within the agency and find efficiencies to get that position up and running without coming to the legislature for a budget ask in that regard. So, Madam Chair and members, then starting with the overview on the right-hand side, I'm going to approach the overview in two ways. One is just to quickly lay out the budget part of it, and then to come back and talk about the major programs. And the reason for that is that we have very few operations at the department that are funded exclusively by the general fund. And the general fund, as you can see from that top chart, is a very small part of the Department of Administration's overall budget. So in total, the Department of Administration's fiscal 2018-19 budget base is just shy of $400 million, $398.5 million for the 2 years. As you can see, only 11% of that comes from the general fund. 5% of that is actual pass-through grants to other entities. And only 6% of it is actually contributes to the operations of the department. So the Department of Administration is almost exclusively 89% funded through non-general funds. The one thing I would underscore with that is unlike agencies that you might be familiar with in other jurisdictions where the fees or resources might come from non-general fund taxes or non-general fund licensing fees or regulatory functions or things like that, for the most part, our non-general fund resources come from other governmental entities. So charges to state agencies, participation of local units of government, or other governmental purchasers through our cooperative purchasing arrangements, and that sort of thing. And then finally, I guess, moving on from that high level, if there's, you know, one key point I would leave you with is that as a central service agency, that is the way we operate, primarily through chargebacks. And clearly, you know, I think central service agencies are a best practice in the private sector, a best practice in the public sector, if they're properly funded and well managed. And I think that that is something that we can have more conversation on going forward, but I think that that is an important thing because, frankly, what I feel like I have observed in some areas of the work that we do as commissioner is that as we have occasionally made budget cuts, what we've also seen is that we actually lose some of that efficiency by state agency duplication of effort. If we can't provide the services anymore because we're cutting them back, we find that agencies may have to get their needs met by implementing solutions on their own rather than coming to the centralized service entity for solutions. So I think that that's an important just philosophical approach to how do we best serve government. Moving to the second pie chart then, Madam Chair and members, our general fund appropriations for the biennium are $44.3 million is our budget base for fiscal year 2018-19. There's only, frankly, one of those small areas that is exclusively a general fund amount, and that's the little bit for school trust lands there. There is five small areas that are almost exclusively general fund or federal funds. I should have noted above that federal funds are really a minor part of our operations. Less than 1% of our budget comes from federal funds. So the programs, just to talk a little bit about the six programs that either come from general fund support for the most part or federal fund support, those include our area of community services. One of the major divisions or units in terms of our organizational chart at the, not major from us from a staff capacity, but one of the areas where how we organize our functions at the department is the community services area. So we at the Department of Administration host the state demographer that does census work. Many of you are familiar with the state demographer. We host the governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities, which is largely federally funded. We host the STAR program, which is the state's assistive technology program that is also largely federal funded. Then we also oversee the state's data practices and open meetings law, which involves a fair amount of training. We train about 1,200 various stakeholders across state government each year, across the state each year, mostly local government officials, the media, and others who are interested in understanding both open meeting law requirements and data practice requirements. We also host the state archaeologist, which is a small two-person operation, but is very essential to a lot of business activity that happens in the state. So development activity, roads, bridges, major construction projects. Quite often, the state archaeologist's database and work needs to be because of requirements in state and federal law, part of verifying that the property is in a state where we can dig up the soil. We also operate the Office of Grants Management, which is also very small from a staffing perspective, from an FTE perspective. That office is responsible under statute for determining and educating agencies on some central grants management policies that all agencies are expected to follow. Then, Madam Chair and members, the remaining largely general fund supported programs are the SMART program, which is SMART stands for Small Agency Resource Team. We spend about $0.9 million general fund and about $0.6 million special revenue fund, which is charges for services to agencies where we serve about 20 different small agencies, boards, and commissions in support of their human resource and financial transaction function. Again, a very good model for doing business, limited only by the resources available and the number of clients that we can serve. Frankly, small agencies, boards, and commissions can have a tendency to be, just because they may only be three- or four-person shops without the expertise, be the entities that can expose the state to the most liability or risk in terms of doing things wrong or making decisions that result in legal liabilities or that sort of thing. So I think that this is an important function for us to maintain, and if we could, frankly, expand over time. We have a waiting list at any point of about 10 to 15 agencies that would like to be served by the SMART program, but we don't have the capacity to do so. Then we also support state agencies through our continuous improvement program, which is about $800,000. We trained in the past year about 400 state agency managers on continuous improvement principles that we operate very much on a train-the-trainer kind of model throughout state government. And then we also do lead some projects and help assist on some projects in the continuous improvement area. And we've increased, what's really nice about this is the work of the agency has increased from 14 to 23 cabinet agencies that are participating in the continuous improvement program efforts right now. And then finally, I mentioned the school trust lands director. Some of you may know that over the last couple sessions, we received some budget dollars for the school trust lands director through a cooperative arrangement with the Department of Education and the Department of Natural Resources in a new position that was created, and we're primarily a fiscal agent in that regard. So, Madam Chair and members, then moving on to, I guess, the one other big area just to touch on, because it does account for 49% of our general funds, as you see, but there are other experts who can come and present to you and give you more information, is we're the fiscal agent for largely public broadcasting grants, so grants to public TV, NPR, Amper stations, as well as we are occasionally the named agency for legacy grants, whether they be to public broadcasting or other examples of legacy grants that we have administered are the Big Marine Veterans Camp, Como Zoo, Great Lakes Aquarium, and some others. So that reflects pass-through money. The other money, general fund money, that is in that category is the department receives an appropriation of $8.158 million a year for the in lieu of rent appropriation, which is then passed through into our non-general fund accounts to cover the maintenance and operation costs for maintaining this building, the legislative space in this building, legislative and public space in the Capitol, ceremonial areas on the Capitol complex grounds, and some other ceremonial space, and then also space for constitutionally chartered veterans and military organizations in the Veterans Services Building.
Commissioner, on that piece, remind me again what percent you take from the grants to administer them. I know we've had this conversation in the past, but how much do you take? Is it a 3% threshold, or what was the amount again?
Very little. Up to 3%.
Up to 3%, so it varies then.
And I should be clear, that is only of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund grants. I'm pretty sure we get zero from the general fund grants.
Okay. And you'll be able to provide the greater detail on that.
Yes.
Too.
And actually, I have, and I think I have in my notes later. It actually is a fairly tight area. If you look deeper into the budget narratives that I saw copies of them back there and have been available since the end of November. We really only have about 0.6. We only get enough funding to cover less than one FTE or about one FTE to do all of the grants management work that we do, which, frankly, given, you know, the state's fiduciary responsibility to make sure that grants are being effectively and appropriately used, continues to be a challenge for us. So I appreciate the question.
Okay. I'm going to pause you right there and see if anybody else has any questions at this point. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, thanks for coming in. I noticed that I'm interested in your continuous improvement process you guys administer. Do you sub that out, or what are the origins of that program, and how many agencies are taking advantage of that?
So, Madam Chair and Representative, right now we have 23 agencies that we work with. We've done a number of enterprise-wide work in the last year that's been really helpful. We worked with every cabinet agency to evaluate, to assess where they are. Some agencies have a pretty robust in-house continuous improvement functionality. Others, from a CI maturity standpoint, needed more assistance. So we were able to set a really good baseline this earlier in this calendar year as to where agencies are at, so that we can better position ourselves to help them. We do not. It's an internal function. When it originated, we actually, and this was well before my time, but the state, I think, initiated a lean program maybe 10-12 years ago. And I know as we moved into the continuous improvement area and the way that we currently support that program and make use of it throughout state government, we worked a lot with General Mills at the time, is my recollection. And they had extensive CI work that they did there, and we occasionally check in with them as well and keep tabs with. I know that the individual that we've hired to direct to manage came most recently from Deed, but just prior to us hiring the individual from Deed, had worked at Target in a similar capacity. So there's a lot of cross-fertilization of ideas. We have private sector people who also serve on the Continuous Improvement Council, so that there's cross-fertilization of ideas and as to how best to serve agencies.
Representative Uglum?
Sounds like a good program, and I know private industry does a lot of that, and I'm glad to see that you're tapping into that, and I hope you're able to quantify some of the cost savings. And one other quick question. You mentioned cooperative purchasing, and as a former mayor, I think we used to do our squad cars through the state and so on and so forth. It's an area where you can obviously save a lot of money. Could you tell me a little bit about if that program is expanding and how you negotiate the contracts and identify the vendors?
Commissioner Mossman.
So that's a very good question, and Representative, I'm going to partly, in answering your question, jump into what was going to be the next kind of part of overview. So one of our major responsibilities, frankly, at the Department of Administration is to oversee the state's procurement system. So the state purchases, it varies from year to year, but in the most recent fiscal year, an estimated $3.2 billion worth of goods and services a year. And so that includes purchases that local governments might make through our state contracts. It does not include Minsky or the University of Minnesota. But we have less than 50% of the staff costs, the operating costs for our state procurement system, come from the general fund. So I actually underscore that because just to make the point that I think few things could be more central to the core operating functions of an entity than its procurement, but yet we rely very heavily on the cooperative purchasing side of the our activity to also fund the purchasing staff. So in answer to your question, what we do is it depends on the contract, but most of the time when we enter into a master contract or put out an RFP and then enter into a master contract, whether that be for vehicles or road salt or fuel or any office supplies, any number of things that we purchase for the enterprise. We set it up in a way that local governments are able to register with us and set up an account and purchase off of those contracts. And then we partly, when they purchase off the contracts, the vendor pays us a small fee as a part of the negotiated contract to help us cover the costs for doing that. What I would say is it is, it's a resource capacity issue. I think it's something
right.
that local governments, that it would be, I would, you know, be delighted to talk to you more about how we could find the resources to market it more to local governments, because I think it is underutilized, particularly within the state, by local governments. And another big part of our cooperative purchasing venture is a real success story started in 1985, the Minnesota Multi-State Contracting Alliance for Pharmaceuticals, which actually started in Minnesota as an entity focused on being able to bulk purchase pharmaceuticals for efficiency reasons, and now actually governments all across the country purchase off of the MCAP contract. So about 49 states and hundreds of local governments purchase off the MCAP cooperative purchasing contract.
Representative Ewell?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay. Got Representative Johnson? Do you want to wait, or do you want
to? Yeah, I think, Madam Chair, I'll wait until he's completed his testimony if he still has more to go, in case he answers the question.
And I also have Representative Ward. Would you like to wait?
No, I have a question about what you've already covered. Mm-hmm. Just want to be sure that I understood. When it seemed, what I heard was that when there are some cuts to your budgets, that sometimes those services get shifted somewhere else. So the implication that I was hearing is that we're not really saving anything. So could you clarify that for me, please?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the question, and I have a good example for you. My kind of on the principal point was that certainly one of the things that I think has made Minnesota state government perform well and efficiently by measures that where people look at how do states compare in terms of the work that they do, Minnesota generally performs very well, is the value that our central service agencies bring to being able to make sure state government takes advantage of economies of scale, finds common ways of doing things so that we're not doing them in multiple ways, minimizes risk and liability by having expertise that is focused on understanding the best practices and deploying them. But I think that we also have situations where, because of diminished resources, we have pulled back, and then at a broad level, that can then be counterproductive, is my point. And one example of that is, just for example, in the technology support for the state procurement system, which I might argue that we actually don't have a state procurement system so much as we have a state accounting system. It is what it is. But we have state agencies operate about 40 subsystems across state government, IT systems, in order to get from the point of having a need and an idea and communicating the need to purchase something through to the ordering, the receipt of the product, the payment of the product. That's and or the solicitation, if necessary, the RFP and the evaluation of that RFP. So there are multiple and in many cases redundant systems being operated across state government in order to facilitate the purchasing process.
Okay. Commissioner, you want to continue?
Then, Madam Chair and members, I'll move on to facilities management, which is really actually, if you look at the bottom, the all funds chart on the bottom of the page is, from a budget standpoint, our largest operations from a cost perspective. It is 99.5% non-general funded. So this is our operation and maintenance of 23 buildings on the state capitol complex. We maintain about 4.5 million square feet on 140 acres of land, including 31 parking facilities and special revenue permits for folks to use, Minnesotans to use the Capitol complex. This is results largely from both the in lieu of rent that I talked about earlier to cover the space costs for legislative space and some other ceremonial designated space, and then charges to state agencies at lease rates that is based on the building that they're in.
And, Commissioner, do we have any vacant space at this point?
We have some recent space that has opened up only. It's not unusual to have a space that comes available during points of transition. So, obviously, we have some space that has recently opened up just with the completion of the Capitol restoration and people moving back and tenants moving back into their permanent space. I would say, however, that there's most certainly space that we're leasing in the nearby area that we could make use of all of the space, and so that'll be where we immediately move into the process of looking at how to better reallocate the space.
And how tied in are you to the lease?
How tied into?
Yeah, how long is the lease?
The state always has the option in our leases to cancel a lease to move from lease space into state-owned space.
All right.
So, Madam Chair and members, then...
I apologize. What's the square footage then?
Madam Chair, I don't have that off the top of my head. I can certainly get that.
Great.
Madam Chair and members, real estate and construction services is another core state government function that the Department of Administration is responsible for. We oversee about 750 property leases across the state and manage about 280 construction projects. That's about 45, frankly, can be a fairly heavy load, about 45 projects per construction staff person. That's obviously, we have about 100 or so kind of active projects in the works at any one time between asset preservation or major construction projects like the Capitol restoration or the construction of a new building. The 280 is because we obviously have to track those projects all the way from their initial RFP all the way through the closeout, all the closeout documents and all of the final payments, which can be some years after folks move into the building or start using the space, depending upon warranty periods and other circumstances. I would say here that this is yet another area, I think, just to kind of this, the real estate and construction services area is funded about 77% from the general fund and about 23% from other funds. I think it's another area that reflects to some extent challenges that we've had to find the resources in order to make sure that we can complete, continue doing the work that the department is responsible for doing under statute. This is an area that, if you go back some years, was more heavily or exclusively general fund supported. We now get some of these resources either by charging state agencies, which may not actually be the people who are benefiting from the real estate and construction services that are being provided in some cases, or we actually get some resources over a 20-year period by charging bond projects for the oversight of the project. So, again, maybe not necessarily the best way always, but it is certainly an allowable and necessary way to, in order to make sure that we're also managing those projects in the state's best interest.
How much would you say on the bond piece that tabulated throughout the years?
The number that's sticking in my head is that we have about four positions that are non-general fund supported, but I'd have to get the specifics.
Okay. We do have Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. I got a little bit of interest and information on, we've got multiple sites and campuses across the state that are, because of underutilization, some of those are being shared with local government or used for broader activities. And so is there anywhere that you've got information on those agreements, how many square footage? A good example is there was a discussion for one of the U of M campuses that wasn't being fully utilized to be able to do some cooperative education programs, and I'm not sure how all of the funding ends up, but we'd hate to be only using part of a building and not and paying for that upkeep. Are there any documents about those types of agreements and how they work, so that if there are groups or entities that are interested in partaking of that, that we can direct them to the right people or give them a starting point?
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, so a couple things. One of the programs that I'm going to talk about, I'll just talk about it now, that the department is responsible for also is called the Enterprise Real Property Program, which is about $650,000, most of which is IT costs and one FTE to manage a database that includes, that's developed in collaboration with all other state agencies, that tracks all 5,500 state of Minnesota owned structures across the state. As well as the land that we own. It does not include MinSKU's properties or the University of Minnesota's properties. I believe that they have a similar type of database for themselves. So we know one of the key reasons for establishing that database in the first place was to have an apples-to-apples way of identifying and assessing the condition of buildings and the preventative maintenance needs of those buildings. Some of them are so that database would reflect buildings in all sorts of conditions. Some of you may have heard me say in the past, the state, we know from that that the state has a backlog in deferred maintenance of at least $1.2 billion. Probably more if you convert it into kind of the asset preservation aspect of that. But some of those spaces would also be basically should probably be demolished. So, but the resources aren't there to demo them. So there's some vacant buildings. A good example is right across the street, the Ford building. Obviously has been vacant for, I would say, 10 or so years, and the state pays about $50,000 a year, we do at the Department of Administration, to just maintain the safety of that building. But as far as, so the reason I give you all that background is it's a little bit tricky because not all that space would be usable space, and it certainly wouldn't be space that someone could just move into and start using for an office building without some resources to get the space into the condition it's needed to be used. So we certainly, through our leasing program, work with state agencies where we can, especially in some of greater Minnesota's larger cities where there's opportunities to be in one building rather than in multiple different buildings. That is usually better for constituents and allows us to get some economies of scale. But I don't believe that the database actually tells us. It does tell us absolutely the square footage of the buildings, but I don't believe it tells us sort of the utilization rate, like how many employees or functions are in that square foot, that footprint per building. So it doesn't link it up to the utilization in that way.
Representative Quam?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm interested in maybe meeting with the appropriate people and staff to understand the inventorying and being able to set up some communication with other levels of government and entities so we can more fully utilize and then get a grasp on what might be a good candidate for clearing so that it could be used for something else. And thank you for the information.
Happy to do that.
Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. Commissioner, do you have oversight over the our state armories?
Commissioner.
No.
Okay.
All right, Commissioner, go ahead.
Madam Chair and members, then to cover the last three kind of remaining large areas of the department's portfolio, one is fleet services. Our biennial budget for fleet services is about $55 million. It's 100% other funds that operates as a business. They're not all for the Department of Administration. We can talk about that later, but we manage about 2,000 fleet vehicles for the enterprise. Agencies are not required to use us. Many of them do for their fleet needs. We have made a number of enhancements in the fleet area that have been rolling out and are rolling out. One of the, I think, really exciting opportunities from an efficiency standpoint is that we've been installing telematics in all of our passenger vehicles in particular so that we can get better data on how those, whether they're being used efficiently and they're making sure they're being maintained on the timely schedule. And the other value I think that is really key that we're focusing on is then replacing and disposing of state-owned vehicles, much like Enterprise or someone else would when they're at their kind of optimal resale level relative to the life cycle costs that we're incurring.
Commissioner, why is it that we don't require all agencies to use the fleet through your office?
I'm sure I don't have an answer to that question.
Do you know what agencies don't predominantly use that?
Not off the top of my head, but we could get a list.
Okay. I think that would be helpful. Thank you.
Then, Madam Chair and members, we also operate the Surplus Services Program, which I mentioned earlier. It also operates as a business, 100% non-general funds, so we, under state law, take surplus property from agencies, resell it, cover our costs, and then return resources, money from the sales of those activities back to the agencies. And then finally, another large area of our operations that's reflected in the pie chart at the bottom is the risk management programs that are operated by the Department of Administration. It's about 23% of our total budget. Only about 2% is general fund, 98% is other funds. So we have about 3,300 new liability property and working workers' compensation claims annually. Just to back up a step, so we administer the workers' compensation program for the state of Minnesota and then also self-fund with a reinsurance program backing it up, of course, property and casualty insurance for state properties also. So we insure about $15.7 billion worth of state property, about 13,600 vehicles for liability. And one of the things that we've been doing in this area for a number of years is something called the MinSafe program, which has been really vital to reducing. We estimate that we've reduced about 2,000 workplace injuries through an enterprise-wide consortium where all agencies and their safety staff are at the table to help make sure that we're doing all we can to diminish the likelihood of workers' comp claims in particular that the state incurs, whether it's from slips, trips, and falls or needing to stretch more before you do heavy lifting or that sort of thing. So, Madam Chair and members, that is I kind of covered, if you flip to the back page, just part of the takeaway. We highlighted here just kind of an overview, most of these numbers, the $3.2 billion in state procurement I've talked about, but this highlights the major functions of the Department of Administration. And with that, I'm happy to stand for any questions that you have.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, thank you for your testimony. One of the things I'm aware from last biennium was that you were pursuing, you know, some other strong goals for diversity in state contracting. Could you give me a little bit of update on how that has progressed with respect to women and minorities and veterans and so forth? Are we heading in the right direction?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Representative, we're definitely headed in the right direction. I appreciate the question. We have, just to refresh for the committee, we in 2015 received some resources to set up an Office of Equity and Procurement, and we have really been doing quite a bit of work since then. We have implemented the first ever about a year ago. We'll be having another one coming up, but we implemented about a year ago the first state-hosted opportunity fair for small businesses to come and meet the folks in state government who make purchasing decisions. We've implemented an Equity Select program, which gives minority and women-owned businesses the opportunity and agencies the opportunity to select contracts up to direct contracts up to $25,000 to small and minority businesses. We have retrained all of the 700 or so state employees that have a decision-making role across state government in procurement in how they can better make decisions that increase the amount of subcontracting that we do. We have one issue that we've heard a lot about from small businesses is the need to pay them more quickly, and so we've worked with MMB to on a prompter pay so that we pay small businesses within 15 days rather than a net 30, which is the state otherwise might prefer to hold on to its cash longer like some businesses do, but we actually pay net 15 on small businesses. And as a result, from 15 to 16, and I would just say we've also overhauled the way the methodology that we use to set subcontracting goals that I think will result in subcontracting goals of about 60% greater. We have increased by roughly 25% the number of certified businesses. And we have, particularly for black-owned, American Indian-owned veterans, and a couple of other categories, substantially increase the amount of procurement that we do with them in a year. So for black-owned businesses, for example, it was an unfortunately low $135,000 a year out of $2.5 billion to $2.5 to $3 billion. It's now up to just south of $1 million a year in direct payments. What I would say is one of the challenges that we are still working on is that is only the only thing we're able to measure right now is direct payments. So we pay the prime. We are actually still working to improve our data systems as a result of some resources we got last year to capture the subcontracting work. So one of the major ways that we help steer dollars towards minority and women and veteran-owned businesses is through subcontracting, and we don't actually have the data right now to, because we pay the prime, not the subcontractor, where we don't have that in our numbers. So that and just businesses that are too large to be certified, for example, the emergency repairs that were done on this building this summer were completed by a minority-owned construction company, and because it's larger than a certified company, it doesn't count in the numbers. So we're trying to get a better way of capturing and telling the story, but we're definitely making a good progress. I appreciate the question.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you referenced veterans, and I'll Representative Detmer is very interested in this as well. And you probably ask, I'll just let him ask the question because he knows more about that than I. But just one additional question having to do with the state capital restoration. Where is that at? Are we completely done now? I see there's a few people roaming around doing some work. Madam Chair, if I may ask them that question, and that'll be it for me. Where are things at with capital restoration?
Madam Chair, well, first of all, I hope that you all are I think the turnout has been fantastic, so I hope things are functioning well for you. It's about 95% done, so there were a number of things that we anticipated. January 3rd was the date we anticipated being able to have the building open for public use, but we always knew that we would have some interior and exterior work ongoing. The exterior work really is primarily right now finishing up the copper restoration work on some of the roof systems that are copper. We had some failing soldering in parts of that work, and so that's being restored. I anticipate that's one of the last things that will be done late summer or early fall. And then some landscaping will have to be done after the crane and stuff moves. And then interior, we have some tenant spaces that are still being finished, primarily tenant spaces and some decorative painting. And I assume over the next 3 to 4 or 5 months that will be finished. And just to circle back to your previous question, 40% of the work on the capital restoration project has been done by women and minorities. So that's also been, I think, a really good story for Minnesota.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Hugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner, for your presentation. Really appreciate it. And my apologies, Madam Chair, for arriving late. I was with a constituent. So I have a few questions with regard to the handout that may have been covered. The handout that details responses from the Commissioner to some inquiries that you made in December along with Senator Kiffmeyer. Mm-hmm. And the first point that I would like to reference is with regard to rulemaking. I had a particular interest in rulemaking, and I see that the agency is in the final stages of an expedited rulemaking process.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like this is expected to be complete next month. And I'm wondering if you could just give a brief overview of what that process looks like. I'm curious as to why expedited rulemaking was necessary. I think it was granted in 2015. Mm-hmm. And might that process save the state any money?
Question?
Madam Chair and Representative Pugh, thank you for the question. So, and your broader question, I'm not necessarily an expert on the whole the rulemaking process, but what I would say about this particular rule and the expedited nature of it is that you may or may not recall in 2015. I brought to the legislature a governor's recommendation to, again, one of the efficiencies and work that we're doing in the area of targeted group businesses is that there is a federal certification for DBEs and a set of federal requirements for minority business enterprises. Then there was a set of criteria for certifying for the state targeted group business program, and then local governments in Minnesota also have a set of certification standards. And we are trying to do two things. One, to align all those standards since they are kind of philosophically, for the most part, all the same, all getting at the same goals. And then we're also trying from an IT and interfacing perspective get them all to come through a single interface. So in answer to your question, there was a law change in 2015 that aligned the state and federal requirements for certifying small women and minority-owned businesses. Mm-hmm. And that law change meant that our rules were going to be out of line. And so the expedited rule, the rules are, for the most part, what you've already passed into law. So there's very few additional features that needed to be incorporated into the rules. So the expedited nature, I think my sense is because the legislature felt that they were already speaking when they, you know, by virtue of passing the law that changed the line of requirements.
Representative Hugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so my second question, and thank you for your response. That's great. My second question is with regard to the federal funding. I heard you say, and I see that the two programs that are federally funded are the STAR program and the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities. And I'm wondering if those departments are funded in their entirety through federal funding. And then I have a follow-up question with regard to federal resources.
Madam Chair, Representative Pugh, the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities receives about just north of $1 million annually, and the State's Assistive Technology Program receives about $490,000 annually. We did receive, they're almost both exclusively federally funded. We did receive last year $148,000 per year, I believe it was, general fund to supplement the work of the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities because they play such an essential role in the Olmstead implementation effort within the state to do research. So other than that, there's a small match to the federal grant as well in the STAR program in DDC. So otherwise, those programs are exclusively federally funded.
Representative Pugh. And thank you, Madam Chair. And so my follow-up question on that is, so this is the funding that was received within the last biennium with regard to these two programs. I'm wondering if, say, over the last 5, even 10 years, if you're aware of any other federal funding that has come to the state of Minnesota that was utilized in creating any of the programs or departments that may be a part of this org chart that I'm looking at here that we're no longer receiving.
Madam Chair, Representative Pugh, I don't believe so. The only thing that comes to mind that's even close to that is I believe if you go back about 10 years ago or so, there was some one-time grant that came to that the department had a role in administering for state assistive technology that actually was passed through to a nonprofit to operate and help buy equipment, but that grant has been processed and closed out. Our functions at the Department of Administration don't, for the most part, lend themselves to many federal grant opportunities.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I'm really interested in environmental work, and with the fleet changes that you've made, has there been anyone measuring the greenhouse gas emissions and what we've saved in that area? Can you give us any idea about the benefits of that?
So I appreciate the question, Representative. We've actually, there's a number of agencies that are doing work around environmental sustainability and efficiencies in that regard. One of the things that we've been spending a lot of time on and that I've been focusing on since becoming commissioner is how we can better support agencies and better collaborate across state government to achieve more outcomes, because I think there's actually some win-win opportunities in the area of environmental sustainability to both do better and to have cost savings potentially over time. Mm-hmm. So we've approached that in a number of different ways. But in the short answer to your question is that there's something called the Climate Registry that the state of Minnesota participates in, which is a nonprofit that we pay a small amount to that to set a baseline and measure a baseline for what the carbon emissions are and the greenhouse gas emissions as a result of the functions of state government, so not in the state as a whole, but as a result of the fleet or the operation of prisons or the operation of the building of highways and that sort of thing. And so we will have moved this year from having a handful of agencies reporting into the Climate Registry to hopefully having almost all agencies reporting into that for a baseline. We've also done a lot of work. The governor's office initiated, and we hosted a results conference across agencies to set up some shared metrics that all agencies will help drive to in terms of identifying where might be some of the low-hanging fruit that we can make progress on. So one certainly in the area of fleet is because we have some programs and some efforts afoot to try and make sure we're purchasing vehicles that only have an EPA rating of 7 or higher. We've implemented some green lease language, I guess is what I say. So one of the challenges that we have with lease properties, for example, is that we oftentimes don't have the data to monitor it. So we're just starting with things like the expectation that as a result of your leasing with the state of Minnesota that you'll provide us utility data and you'll provide us other data so that we can help use our dollars where we're leasing property basically to help drive change. We're also looking and doing work in procurement. So basically every area that the department operates in, we are trying to do something in the area of making improvements there. And the biggest one where I'm hoping, knock on wood, later this week that we that Xcel actually will get PUC approval. Some of you may be aware that we entered into an arrangement with Xcel Energy that the Lieutenant Governor and I announced later last fall, I think it was September, to purchase one-third of the base electric needs for the state capital complex from renewable energies.
Representative Ward, do you have anything further?
I have a follow-up question, if you don't mind, Madam Chair. Commissioner, do we have, with that increasing data, I realize that you're gathering a lot. Mm-hmm. Does this, if I'm understanding right, the nonprofit that's kind of giving you some monitoring and feedback, are they also able to help you make some comparisons with what's happening in the private sector?
I'm going to have Colonel Herkey come up and help. Someone tell us what the climate registry can do for us.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Madam Chair, members, the climate registry is specifically focused on. I am Larry Herkey, the director of the Office of Enterprise Sustainability. The focus of the climate registry really is to provide the entity with a baseline of where they are in the areas of fleet, buildings, and other. And for the state of Minnesota, that is primarily focused on landfills and wastewater treatment facilities. Mm-hmm. There are other states that we can benchmark against and national benchmarks that can be used, and those are shared as part of the reporting process.
Representative Ward.
I just would like to comment. It would be interesting to see that at some point. Thank you.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, wondering if there's kind of like a summary list available of the various leases. I notice there's a lot of square footage and not looking for a detail thing, but just wondering if there's a summary that might show things like square footage, type of use it is, where it's located and so forth, and then obviously the cost just to see what's being paid.
Mm-hmm. I think we can provide that for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. You have a comparison then, too, about privately in comparison to private.
Madam Chair, I'm going to just digress and really like crow about us being able to land Colonel Herkey from the Department of Military Affairs, by the way, because from what we were talking about, some of you may
start
or
start a fight here between the two.
I know, I know. But some of you may or may not know, but the Department of Military Affairs at Camp Ripley did a lot of really great work around solar and energy conservation and savings, and so it's really a credit to be able to have them helping the whole enterprise now. In answer to the question, when we do the business plans, because again, we operate our space operations and facilities management operates like as a business, we do comparisons with other like private office space in and around the Capitol complex. I think one challenge is a little bit, and so I think we compare reasonably well with most of those buildings, but I think there's some caveats that need to be taken into mind, which is that a lot of times the nature of the buildings that the state needs to operate are not necessarily the same as a office building, right? So the department, the health ag lab building, for example, got a lot of offices in it, but it's also a health lab with some really significant and costly to operate air exchange requirements in order to make that top level the CDC eligible lab and various other things. So it really depends on what the building, the functions of the building are and its capabilities in terms of the comparison. It could easily be not an apples to apples.
Mm-hmm. Representative Plum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, I was looking through some of the material you gave us, and I noticed fiscal year 16 was over fiscal year 15. The admin in-service fleet vehicles increased by over 10%. Was that due to increase of staff, or was that a change in policy? It would be the back page of that document in that table.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Representative Quam, it's not a change in policy. To get to the response here, it would be, I'll have to get you more information. Virtually all of our vehicles are vehicles like snowplows, trucks, maintenance vehicles, jobbing trucks, so it might be that we moved from one larger vehicle to a series of smaller vehicles. These could be everything from the sort of electric Cushman vehicles that are you might see on the Capitol complex doing maintenance work to pick up trucks. We only have three passenger vehicles, which I think is largely unchanged, maybe from two to three. So I don't have more information for you than that. So.
Representative Kwan. Representative Detmer.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Johnson. I did have a question. You reminded me, and Commissioner, that's a two-part question. First of all, thank you for the work you've done with the veterans-owned small businesses and getting our businesses certified within the state of Minnesota. I know you worked closely with the Department of Veterans Affairs. And how is that program going? And then the second part of my question is, you mentioned something about subcontracting, you didn't have the numbers on that. Would you be able to, in the future, get the committee the numbers of veterans in terms of subcontractors, and along with the minority groups and targeted groups? I know you didn't have the numbers on that, but how is that program going with certification process?
Commissioner.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Detmer, and thank you for your leadership on helping to get some of those changes into place also. I don't have the number of certified veteran businesses in front of me. I know that they, I can see from what I have in front of me that they certainly have benefited, veteran-owned businesses have benefited from the equity select language that we put into law last year, which it gives agencies the opportunity to up to $25,000 directly select a certified business. It also, I know that my gut tells me, my recollection tells me that we have maybe pushing 75 businesses or so that are certified, which from zero over a year and a half ago. So something in that neighborhood, I can get you those numbers. But we had some really good responsiveness. On the data question, we are currently working with the Metropolitan Council that has a system that we're going to leverage to help get better direct information on the subcontracting work that we do with Prime. So we're in the process of, with some resources that you helped us get last year, of deploying that, and we're hoping to have that in place within the next 6 months or so. That I think will get us better information on on subcontracting.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Mossman, now that the most of the work is done at the Capitol and the tunnel areas are opened up, and we've got activity coming from the Senate office building converging into the intersection of Fast and Busy in the tunnel area, I've noticed that there hasn't been a lot of signage allowing people to know where to find things. And as the session continues and there's more traffic down there, to avoid hassles and confusions and backups and things, do you have additional plans for signage to direct those who are coming to learn more about it, influence their government?
Madam Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, I'm not sure signage will be the kind of thing that will ever please everybody, but I know one of the things is obviously we are keeping our ears to the ground as to how and monitoring how it's functioning to see, rather than kind of making changes and then making changes again, to kind of get a sense of what's working and what's not working, and make adjustments as we go along. So we'll keep an eye on it. I appreciate that. I think the particular adjustment is for a lot of people, including myself, is that the basement level is just so substantially changed that that's what really kind of causes people the largest hiccup. And it's actually a little bit difficult to sign as well because of that. My way of trying to summarize it for people is, you used to walk directly through the middle of the Capitol in the tunnel, and now if you want to get all the way through the Capitol, you just kind of stick to the right, or stick to the left if you're coming. Stick to the right if you're headed east, and stick to the left if you're headed west.
Representative O'Driscoll.
So, Madam Chair, Commissioner Mossman, am I to understand that we now have the Department of Transportation have a beltway around the lower level of the Capitol?
I think so.
Representative Flanagan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, this has been very helpful for this this overview. I did have just a question as we're talking about the Capitol and the remodel, and I will not speak specifically to the artwork controversy that we know has been a hot topic. But I wanted to just ask, I had heard that now the Why Treaties Matter exhibit is in the Capitol, and could you just speak to why that decision was made to bring that exhibit in? I think it is beneficial for folks to know our full history, but I think that that's a great addition, and just wanted to hear about sort of the thought process of bringing that in.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Flanagan, thank you for the question. I mean, if you go back actually to, you could go back further than that to the conversation, I guess, but certainly to the space discussions that the Governor and Lieutenant Governor and the Senate Majority Leader and Speaker of the House had in late 2014, early 2015, in terms of delineating, there's nothing in law that says who will be in what space in the Capitol, and so some of you may or may not know this, but that's kind of all worked out in a treaty. And so the space allocation was worked out then, and as part of that discussion, one of the features that was very important to the governor was to have more public space in the building, both for obviously it being the public's building, but both from a functional standpoint, oftentimes Days on the Hill and other sort of large groups would meet in the hallway, or you as members might have to meet your constituents, and the only place to do that might be to talk to them in the hallway. And so now I think there's certainly a lot of opportunity to better accommodate those needs. But certainly one of the other things that the Capital Preservation Commission, which is the statutory entity chaired by the governor with legislative leaders from all sides on the commission, set up a art subcommittee to look at some of the issues that you alluded to, as well as just kind of generally, and certainly one of the conversations of the art subcommittee, as well as the preservation commission, and certainly a priority of mine in the governor's, has been to recognize that while there are historic elements of the Capitol, obviously, that need to be maintained, there's also, Minnesota has changed a lot in the last 115 years, and so it's the Capitol's not an art museum, but it is a place that all Minnesotans should be able to see themselves and relate to when they come to the Capitol. And so I think that third floor public space in particular, as well as some other spaces, is an opportunity to just tell more Minnesota stories. And that's really without necessarily competing with the historic and ceremonial parts of the Capitol. And so I think that that's essentially where that comes from. And and the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council was very cooperative and helpful in being able to, generally speaking, that exhibit tours, and this is a permanent exhibit, so they've been very helpful at helping pull that together too.
Representative Flanagan,
thank you.
I am interested in a couple of things, but I think first what we will have is Ms. Roberts, if you want to go through some of the documents that we have here. Members, you're going to get more details, as I mentioned earlier, as the department is able to provide those details. While she's kind of gathering things together, we had a conversation at one point about the FTE portion, and I know that MMB manages that predominantly. So I don't know if, in answering some of these questions, are you guys going to have MMB provide those details to the level that we're looking for?
Well, we, Madam Chair, and appreciate the question. We did, so we don't have the data for all of the years by all of the funds. I would say two things. One is if you look through the budget narratives, the FTE by fund is in all of the budget narratives. So certainly for the years that are covered in the budget narratives, that information is it's not in the format that you requested, but it is accessible. The other thing is just at the big picture level, for the Department of Administration, what I know is that our FTEs in 2009, we had 107 general fund FTE at that time. We have 83 now. So for the Department of Administration, both our total FTE count as well as our general fund supported staff are both lower than they were by substantial amounts than they were in 2009. So we can get the in-between. Our all funds, that the agency as a whole, was 513 FTE in 2009 and is, I think, 489 now or something like that.
Yeah. Commissioner, I'm most interested in the in-between years so we can see kind of a trend line of where we're at. And so when I looked at the online version, I think it went to 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to want a larger perspective of that. So I'm not sure if that's something that is better provided through MMB or if you guys are just a part of your homework that you're going to be doing later on.
We will obviously work on it with MMB so that I think what none of us would want to have happen is us to come out with one version and then the enterprise to come out with a different version. What I would say, though, Madam Chair and members, is that I think that, you know, going back to the comments that I made earlier about the potential for central services to be a best practice if they're properly resourced, I do think that what I'm finding and observing in my time as commissioner is that some of the things that we now are trying to implement or get back to, or that state agencies or others are asking us to do, does in many ways link back to some of those where the FTE count went down. And one of them in particular is that we, shortly before I arrived, eliminated 4 staff people as a result of budget reductions in the resource recovery area, so in the solid waste and recycling and resource recovery area. And now, you know, 4 or 5 years later, we actually got some money from the legislature to roll out a new recycling program in the Capitol complex, and we didn't get all of those resources back. But I do think that there can be sort of a reinventing of the wheel and circling back to try and either make sure services are being provided by either the central service agency or that agencies will do them on their own and do them in a duplicative fashion if they're not able to have their needs met by an agency like admin. So I will get the numbers, but I think that the high point of 2009 and where we're at now is also indicative of it's a good conversation, I think, about where we should be at as well. We on average hold about 20 positions vacant in the Department of Administration now in order to make ends meet, in effect, from where we have historically been.
Thank you.
And just for members' purposes, too, we'll be also comparing ourselves then to other states and their FTE components as well. But with that, Ms. Roberts, can you walk us through the information that you have here, too?
Madam Chair and members, I think you just have two handouts. Is that correct? That I have provided from two of the systems that are available to the House fiscal staff. The first one is this, looks like this, and I know I will apologize that it's not really very easy to read because of the small print. But what this is, Madam Chair, in your letter to the agencies, you had asked for expenditure detail down to the object code level. And the budget narratives do provide some of this information at a higher level, sort of at the object category level. But within the budget system itself, I'm able to access some more detail for each agency going down to a more detailed object code level. And this goes back to fiscal year 14. So I ran this report for Department of Administration. And in the future, what I will do is export this to Excel and make it in a format that members can actually read. So, but I do want to just let you know that that kind of information is available. Certainly also there's a detailed expenditure information that's in the accounting system. So the accounting system looks back up to the current fiscal year. The budget system has some history, but then plans for the future. So we have two different systems that we look at. So that was the first piece of information that you had requested and wanted some more detail on. The second one that I've handed out says it's called Agency Budget Structure with Funds and Appropriations. And this was a supplement to your request for the legal citations with legal authority for spending. The budget pages do have, if you look at any one of the budget activities, for example, on page, we'll find the first one, they do have references to the legal authority for each of these activities. If you look at, for example, page 13, you'll see a list of various legal authority for the department to undertake these activities. This is sort of a supplement out of the accounting system. It shows just a different view of legal citations. You might be looking for something really specific, a specific appropriation, and this is the information that the department has actually put into the accounting system to say we have the legal authority to spend this money. So again, I can access this for every agency, and it might be helpful if you have questions about, you know, why do they do this, or where do they get the authority to do this. So that was the second piece. There are a couple other pieces of information that I can pull out. For example, there's a report on transfers in and out of agencies, which I know that you had requested and is often of interest to members, particularly when there are functions that all agencies are contributing to. For example, the governor's office. There are agencies all transfer money to the governor's office to pay for the legislative staff, and that's an ongoing process that covers several governors. But we can get reports that show you that kind of information if you're interested in looking at that. And I also can, if it's useful to the committee, just some, there are tables that summarize the FTE information that's in the budget narrative, but we'll pull it all up into one table if that would be useful.
Mm-hmm. Members, we're really going to dig into all of these details, and so if you are not comfortable with the amount of paper that's consumed, you just let my legislative assistant, Sam, know. We'll make sure. I know Helen has all the links. She can help us direct you to links, and that way you can bring your laptop instead and do it that way. You just need to let staff know so that they don't put the packet in your folder, and we can save on the copying cost for that purpose. And you can just look at it online that way. Ms. Roberts, anything else?
Madam Chair, I think that's it for now.
And then, Commissioner, I mean, we eagerly await the additional information. In particular, your agency, as you mentioned earlier, has a lot of the chargeback because you are trying to provide a one-stop shop for all the agencies. And so I'm really interested in that as well as and into the object code level of all the different chargebacks that you do. And I think that we should probably spend at some point when you have the opportunity to kind of put that all together. We'll have just a hearing on that alone to kind of go through all of that so you can kind of explain that process, your role as basically the administrator for the state.
Yeah. And Madam Chair, I guess I would, you know, we want to be as helpful as we can on that, so I want to make sure in terms of the information you're seeking and making sure that it's what we would pull out and provide would actually help you do the analysis that you're looking to do. And my concern or question particularly in that regard or observation, I guess, would be, for example, on the businesses that we operate. We, as I mentioned, put together a business plan for each of those businesses. Those business plans are public information. We could get you copies of those business plans, and they set the rates. I think if we were to do an accounting system run, what you would see is, I'm not sure that would be as helpful, frankly, because the chargebacks, you know, the amount that the Department of Human Services pays us in January and February and March is really tied back to the business plan. Mm-hmm. And so the numbers that you would see from the accounting system may, I would suggest, be less meaningful than taking a look at the business plan and seeing what the rate is per square foot and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So, few.
Yeah, I think what we're probably going to find out is as you provide the information on maybe a higher level, we'll determine how far down that level we'll want to go. So, if for me in particular, I am looking to see for each of the agencies how much they're paying in, what the purpose is for that payment, and so if you want to put it in more in a general terms, and then we can determine how much more detail. And there might be just specific areas in particular that I'd be interested in, but we'll have to take a look and see what the first general data is and then go from there. Okay. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I just wanted to confirm, you know, in this detail, the compensation, that number always includes everything, you know, obviously the benefits, but both the employer-employee contributions to retirement plans, maybe if there's any auto allowances or anything else, that it's all included in the compensation and not in the operating expense?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Vogel, I'm not exactly quite sure where you're looking, but if there's something labeled compensation, it would include all of those compensation costs, salary. The one thing I would say is I'm not aware of any automobile allowances. So, but yes, it would cover the benefit structure as well as salary insurance, that sort of thing.
Okay.
Representative Vogel?
Yeah, it was the big detail thing.
Got it. Okay.
The narrative. Okay. Members, any other questions? All right. Well, we're going to see you again, and we'll have more questions.
Thank you.
And so looking forward to the data. I appreciate you coming here today.
I appreciate it.
With that, members, we'll be doing something similar tomorrow, and we are adjourned.